This podcast was recorded Friday, November 19th at 10:37 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like the state of Ohio will spend tens of thousands of dollars to make government records more open to the public.
Don't bet on it. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those Snollygosters or shrewd politicians who've been fighting to keep secret the names of nursing homes where thousands of Ohioans died during the early months of the pandemic. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. We'll get to the details of that little story in a moment, but first, the topic that just won't go away. Redistricting.
This is the poster child of snollygostering. Redistricting is the process by which politicians get to pick their voters. It's like back in grade school when you're picking a basketball team. Imagine letting one team pick all the tall players and then leaving the short ones for the other team. Sure, the team with the short players could win, but it's going to be really, really hard.
Yes, it would be. That's basically what an independent analysis says Ohio Republican leaders have done with legislative maps. First, it was the state legislative districts. Now the congressional map is finished, and all three give Republicans a clear advantage.
The congressional map-making process finished this week. Ohio now has 15 districts, down one from the previous map. And according to the independent site Dave's Redistricting, only two of those districts favor Democrats. Nine districts very clearly favor Republicans. Two can be called competitive, with one slightly favoring the Republican Party and the other slightly favoring Democrats.
Democrats and voting rights groups say the maps are unfair and not what voters who approved a new process several years ago wanted. Republican supporters insist the map is constitutional, and they point out that the map keeps seven of Ohio's eight major cities whole inside congressional districts.
Joining us now to talk about the Ohio map and what's going on nationally is Ohio State University law professor and election law expert Ned Foley. Ned, welcome back to Snollygoster.
It's great to be with you.
So we'll focus primarily on the congressional map since that's what's new here. What do you think of the version approved this week?
Well, I think it illustrates the problem that's happening both here and nationwide, which is the elimination of competitive seats. You know, maybe not completely, as you said, maybe there are a couple of seats in the map that are competitive. But when you think about it, the goal of an election is to have a contest of ideas, contest of candidates. And, you know, it shouldn't be a foregone conclusion who's going to win before you even run the election. And more that's what's happening as a result of redistricting. I think that's the story of this decade. Is basically you look around the country at all the maps that have been adopted so far, and you're seeing the reduction in the number of competitive seats.
Well, certainly, if you were to draw a map that lumped like communities together, there would be districts that are not competitive. For instance, far western Ohio, very conservative area. In all likelihood, a district that includes western Ohio counties would significantly favor the Republicans. So where do you decide where the competitive districts should be?
Well, that's a fair point. We are sorting ourselves geographically by our own political affiliation. So rural areas, you know, vote one way and urban areas vote another. But you can measure that issue, that sort of self-sorting just by citizens versus how much extra uncompetitiveness there is in a map as a result of gerrymandering. And one way to do this, it's a little technical, but if you bear with me, we know how competitive statewide races are in every state. You know, Ohio is now more of a red-leaning state than it used to be. It used to be sort of knife's edge purple. You know, nowadays it's Wisconsin and North Carolina that are sitting on the knife's edge. But every state has a statewide measure of how competitive it is. Then what you can do is you could look at all the congressional districts in each state and take the average amount of competitiveness of the districts. And you'll see that in most states, the House districts for U.S. House of Representatives are much more uncompetitive than the state as a whole. So that's step one. Then step two is, okay, well, why is that? Is it because of this geography point and people just live in different places? Well, if you could, you then go to your apps like that Dave Redistricting app, and you can show that you can draw maps that get you closer to that statewide measure of competitiveness, even with the geography, even with cities and rurals voting differently, you can reduce the degree of uncompetitiveness in the House districts. So the extra degree of uncompetitiveness is the product of the political manipulation known as gerrymandering.
Yeah, that's where you see those odd little fingers and hooks in these districts, is because that's what, in this case, the Republicans are doing, is they're trying to dilute, you know, Democratic strongholds and put them with a more rural area. So, yes, people are sorting, but these maps are sorting people even further.
Exactly right. Exactly right.
It sounds like the overall goal should be, right, if you're a total idealist, is to have the congressional map match the overall voting, the voting preferences of the state, right? So Ohio in recent elections has favored about 54% Republican. Is it fair to say that a congressional map in Ohio probably should slightly lean Republican?
Right. That's a useful benchmark. I mean, you know, it's interesting. The U.S. Constitution doesn't require single member districts for congressional, you know, House, U.S. House of Representative elections. That's a product of a statute that Congress first adopted in the middle of the 19th century. Now, I'm not recommending this, but if you just want to think about it, you could have all of Ohio's congressional districts be statewide races, in which case they would match the competitiveness of U.S. Senate races in Ohio. And again, you lose something by doing that. You lose the locality of representation.
That's what the Columbus City Council did. They have districts, but they all run state, all run citywide.
Right, right, right. So, but so I'm not favoring it as a reform, but I'm showing that it, that if you go too far, if the goal is to have better representation for voters by creating single member districts, and it turns out you actually don't have better representation because you manipulated the map to destroy competition, then you may ask yourself, well, why are we doing this in the first place? Is there a better way to do it? Now, under the current environment that does require single member districts, you know, the only way you can eliminate gerrymandering is to take the power to draw the maps away from the politicians and to put it into independent commissions, which Ohio tried to do, but not very successfully, as you know, this cycle. Otherwise, you have to think about different forms of representation. You know, in Europe, I'm again not saying that we should do this, but they have something called proportional representation. There are some plans in the works for something called multi-member districts, which instead of dividing 15 House seats into 15 different districts, you could have, you know, three mega districts, each with five seats, less gerrymandering, more proportionality. This gets a little complicated, you know, maybe for today, but there are different ways to do this.
What's going on around, you mentioned that this is happening around the country. Is Ohio alone in this? I'm guessing not. And it's also a truly bipartisan effort, and the Democrats are playing this game as well.
Yes, I mean, Illinois is a perfect example of that. Illinois is using their power to draw the maps. The Democrats are doing that in Illinois to squeeze both Republican seats out of the map. I think Representative Kinziger lost his seat as a result of what the Democrats did in Illinois. But in addition to shifting the balance in favor of the Democrats, it's also reducing competition. There are going to be fewer competitive seats in the Illinois map this time than last time. And again, that's the story. If you look at the Texas map nationally, a lot of districts in Texas, but fewer of them will be competitive.
Yeah. How about these independent commissions? Any of those working in other areas?
Yeah, they are.
Truly independent commissions. I wouldn't call Ohio as independent. Yeah, they're not voting for themselves, but they're not truly independent when you have the governor and the secretary of state and the auditor and people like that.
Right. Yeah, I think the Ohio model is sort of better thought of as it was an attempt at sort of bipartisan insiders doing it as opposed to one party controlling the process. But unfortunately, it broke down. Arizona, California, Michigan this year, you know, it's a little early in the process to know how Michigan's going to turn out, but it's definitely a state to watch because the citizens got fed up with gerrymandering and did a ballot initiative to create an independent commission along the lines of what they have in Arizona and California. And we'll see if that does any better. The track record so far, again, this is controversial and people have different points of view, but I think most political scientists would tell you that on balance, the truly citizen independent commissions like Arizona and California end up with more competition, end up with more balanced maps. Not perfect, but better.
I read one state, I forget which state it is now, I've read so many articles on this, where they have an independent commission that draws the maps, but then the lawmakers can veto that map.
Well, New York, that's what we're going to see probably in New York.
Okay. What's the point of that?
That's how my wife and I cook dinner. I throw out ideas and she just says no. Ned, as you know, this current situation is working very well for Republicans. They don't want things to change at all, and they are in control. There's no incentive for them to change. Is the only way to do this really the constitutional amendment route that the voters went in 2018? Is that the only way that the system will change?
Well, no. If we're talking congressional maps, Congress has the power to write rules for congressional elections, including the districting rules. And part of the huge bill, this is called the Freedom to Vote bill, that the Democrats put forward for electoral reform in Congress that got filibustered, had a provision on the topic of gerrymandering sort of sandwiched in with everything else that it was doing, drop boxes, absentee ballots, early voting, and the rest. It met with a Republican filibuster in Congress and the U.S. Senate. And as many listeners probably know, there's this debate within the Democratic Party, focusing on Senators Manchin and Sinema about whether to get rid of the filibuster or to keep it around in case the Democrats lose power in the future. From my own analysis, I thought it was a mistake of congressional Democrats to have that mega bill, which just allowed Senator Mitch McConnell to point to everything in it as the Democrats trying to, drive through their version of voting laws. I thought if they had singled out the topic of gerrymandering and said, this is a cancer on democracy, we've got to fix this one thing, whatever else we do, that might have created a slightly different national conversation about reform and the use of the filibuster to block the reform that would have looked a little different. Then it was pretty easy for Senator McConnell to say, why should we accept the Democrats' version of election reform when we have different ideas?
Of course, the gerrymandering in a way is like the filibuster. The people in power don't want to get rid of it because they like it. And then the folks who aren't in power are saying, wait a minute, maybe we can get back into power, then we can draw the maps. And the same thing with the filibuster. We don't want to get rid of it because someday we'll be out of power. And it's a never-ending cycle, it seems. And that's why we have had gerrymandering for, 230 years now, 220 years?
Yeah, it comes exactly. It's worse. I think it is true that we've had gerrymandering since the beginning of the country, but because of the power of computers and because of polarization, mm-hmm. This cancer is growing, I hate to say. This process this decade is uglier than it was last decade, and the last decade was the ugliest ever. And I think it is really hurting governance as well as representation. I think some of the difficulties that are happening in Congress over, economic policy and so forth, the House of Representatives is dysfunctional in part because of gerrymandering, and that's that's blue seats and red seats. They're just so polarized because of gerrymandering, it makes it harder to govern the entire country.
Ned, I'm asking this question at 10:47 a.m. on Friday, November 19th. Governor DeWine has not yet signed the congressional map into law. If he were to do that, do you think it survives a Supreme Court challenge? The U.S. or the Ohio Supreme Court being first, the 2018 reforms say that lawmakers cannot pass a map that, quote, unduly favors any one political party. I think a lot of people would say this map objectively does favor Republicans. Is that enough on its face to get it overturned, or do you think it's more complicated than that?
Oh, it's always complicated, unfortunately. I think the Ohio Supreme Court is the right court to focus on, for reasons that we could get into in terms of the history there. And I think there is a decent chance that the Ohio Supreme Court will just balk at this and say it was an abuse of the new process that was supposed to take place. The U.S. Supreme Court is a much longer shot, given the precedents of the last decade.
They've already punted on it. They just punted on it just last year. They said, we're not going to get involved in this.
Yes, exactly right. Now there's still some issues under the Voting Rights Act that maybe could be addressed, but they are really hard also. But in essence, I'm agreeing with you. I think if you're going to try to fight this map in court, you've got to go to the Ohio Supreme Court. But I don't want to let Congress off the hook here. I think when historians look back on this era, I think they are going to think that Congress really failed to do right by the people, the voters, and they, for the sake of themselves as politicians.
Boy, that's the phrase of the last 5 or 6 years. When historians look back, you know, what are they going to be writing about us in 100 years?
Well, I don't want to be melodramatic, but you know, our democracy is under challenges. We all know that, and the question is how well you meet challenges, and we're not meeting those challenges particularly well.
No, we saw when historians look back at the years before the Civil War, all the missteps that politicians made, and they could have possibly avoided that. We hope we're not in that situation. But
I was gonna say, speaking of being melodramatic,
yes. All right, back to reality. Back to the. But so this map will last for 4 years, Ned, if it withstands a court challenge and the governor does not veto it, which seems unlikely. Do you see any improvement 4 years from now here in Ohio?
No, to be quite honest. I mean, you know, there can be major shifts in public opinion. You know, tidal waves in politics can overcome even the best gerrymandered map, so to speak, right? I mean, the goal of gerrymandering is to try to withstand changing political fortunes. So what Republicans do when they're in power, Democrats do it too when they have the opportunity, is to build a buffer. But no buffer is big enough for a true tidal wave in politics. You know, we've had those from time to time. And, you know, is there something that could happen in American politics that would cause a tidal wave in 2024 or 2026? Possible. But absent that, you know, the power of the map is pretty strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an eternity away. But why would anything change? Like I said, there's no incentive for the majority party to change anything. Ned Foley is an Ohio State law professor and election law expert. Ned, thanks again for joining Snollygoster.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks very much. We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is, if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Time now for our namesake award, the Snollygoster of the Week. We could give it to the Republican lawmakers who tried to hold up the congressional map to get a ban on vaccine mandates. That'd be too easy.
Yeah, that was pretty shrewd, though. I'll give it to them.
Certainly was.
Instead, we're giving it to the state of Ohio and its lawyers. Here's what's going on. Some 8,000 Ohio nursing home residents have died from COVID-19, but we don't know officially where they lived. We don't know in which specific nursing homes they lived. The state has been vigilant in not disclosing that information. State officials cite patient privacy.
Cincinnati TV station WCPO and a few others have sued the state, demanding that information, which normally is on public death certificates, and they say it should be open to the public, but that fight remains in the courts.
But WCPO learned this week the state health department has spent some $42,000 on attorney's fees fighting to keep those records private. Again, records that are normally public.
Call us silly advocates for transparency, I guess, and we certainly appreciate the need for medical privacy, but we think the public would benefit by knowing the exact nursing homes where those people lived.
Yeah, could spot trends, could reward nursing homes that are doing well, could spot nursing homes that are falling short.
You know, we should say that
transparency is good.
Nursing homes have a very strong lobby in the state of Ohio.
They do.
And so
not, it's just coincidence.
Just coincidence, of course.
Yes.
That Okay. Anyway, that will do it for this week's episode of Snollygoster. If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week, you can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. And as always, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. For our audio producer, Eric French, and our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And a reminder, we're off next week, Thanksgiving. Enjoy the turkey. I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.